Hey everybody, this is Doc Mack from the Galloping Ghost Arcade out in Brookfield, Illinois. It's Thursday, March 31st, 2016, and I am joined here, as always, by Gamer of the Year, Pete Hahn.
How you doing, everyone?
And today we have two special guests. From the tech sector, we have Seth Young.
Hello.
And Doug Fox.
Hello.
Sector.
Tech sector, sure.
Sector 7G.
Yeah. Is that G7 classified?
No.
Okay.
We're going to be discussing lots of stuff with them and talk about what it's like to keep 500-plus arcade games up and their history in fixing games and their illustrious careers in keeping these games up and running and working for people to enjoy.
Cool.
So, but we do have a few other things, some big week in scoring.
Yeah, it's been really good scoring in the last... Well, it's been like 2 weeks since we recorded it. It was the, the 10th the last time we recorded, so a little more than 2 weeks.
Wow.
So yeah,
time is flying by.
Yeah, there's always so much going on here.
Yeah. What are some of the high scores? Let's jump right in with that.
You want to do the mystery stuff first, or you want to do regular scores first?
Sure, let's start with the Monday mystery games.
All right. So we're going back three games ago, Make Tracks. On the 14th, James White ended up winning that. I think he beat everyone by a handy amount. Like I think the closest person was Gores, which had he had 22,000. But James had 32,000 by the end of the night, and has since upped his score further than that. So,
yeah, that was an interesting one. We picked that up from an arcade. Brought it in, and they weren't sure they were going to put it on the floor, and they only were able to have about 20 games or so. So we ended up buying it from them, and didn't really have anything else ready to go that week. So that was kind of the easy choice. It was one I had wanted to get out there. I know Walt. It was a favorite of Walter Day's, so we wanted to make sure.
He held the record for it.
He did for a long time.
Yeah.
So we were happy to have it and anxious to get him back out here to play it.
Maybe we'll have him take the house high from James. See James get salty about that.
That would be good.
Yeah.
That would be good.
All right. Then we had next Monday, the 21st, we had Battle Garega.
Yes, that was one I was sure everybody was going to enjoy.
Yes.
Huge thanks to you. You helped me track that board down, right?
Yes, we got it off the Shmups forum.
Yes.
We had it shipped with the Zax ROMs.
Yes.
So that's better for competitive play.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that does is that unlocks the four bonus ships right away, and it also resets the rank, which is the adaptive difficulty. It sends that back to where, if you just reset the machine, where it would be, because that rank value doesn't change if on a normal board if you have the normal ROMs on it. So this is better for scoring competitions, so we wanted to make sure we left that on there. And I think a lot of the players are happy that you did.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that was kind of going to be the case. It's like, for scoring, you really have to have it set like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that came... Jamie Tibbetts ended up taking that one with...
Barely.
3,384,760 points.
Mm-hmm.
I know after it was announced, Fred DeHart...
Came out.
...snuck in for it.
Yep.
So, good competition there.
Yeah, I think he barely beat Fred by like 20,000 points. It was super close.
Yeah, I know. I think it was on his last game. He was getting ready to leave, and
he
thought, just one more. Okay.
Well, it's good he did the one more, then.
Yeah. And then, most recently, this last Monday, we just put up Taito's Night Striker, which came out in 1989.
I never heard of that one before.
I was aware of it from the all the research I had done on Darius. And also from Taito, and
has the same branching path kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Great music in it. Visually, just a really impressive game.
Mm-hmm.
We picked that up at a from a collector recently, and I believe just this previous week. So,
cool. Remember, you had to add it to Orcade too. Like it wasn't even on there.
Yeah, that's true with a lot of the stuff. Especially the last, looking at that row up there with Edward Randy and Bonk's Adventure and the new game area, all those have had to have been added to Arcade just because nobody else has them. So.
Cool.
Pete Gores took that one. I know he's getting close to 1CCing it if he hasn't already.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was right at the last level.
That's crazy.
Last time I saw. But on Monday, he put up just over 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. Everybody's getting, I know every time we put out a game that we bring out the 10X championship belt.
People are getting crazy for it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was Gorz's third win. He's now tied with Shiloh in second place behind Jamie and James, who have 4 wins each.
Yeah.
So we're getting to a tight race.
It's still tight.
Yeah, it's really tight still.
There's not an 8 in 3-3-3.
Right.
Well, and I think there's a lot of people that can still come in and be competitive in this.
Yeah.
There's
season's not over.
Far from it. Far from it.
Not even halfway there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So cool. Then some of the other, what do you want to cover, some of the other scores?
Yeah, I'm going to go through some recent house highs and world records then real quickly. We had James White put up a new house high in Black Widow. That was on the 11th, just after we reported last time. 457,000 on Black Widow. I know he plays that one from the beginning. He doesn't do the level skip to get the bonus points quickly, so
yeah,
it's a good score.
Absolutely.
Yep. Then the next weekend we had Aaron Ozens come in from out of town. He put up a few scores. He put up a new Mace the Dark Age world record, 4,978.
He was in for our Argus event.
That's right, for the Argus event. He also commentated some streams for us. Yes. He commentated P. Gorz playing Edward Randy and James playing Forgotten Worlds, which was awesome that he did that for us.
Yep.
He also put up a score on Batman Forever, which hasn't been beat yet, 768-230. So that's 2 world records that he put up that weekend.
Yeah,
as well.
Very impressive.
Yep.
Huge shout-outs to Aaron for coming out. He's
always a big help.
Absolutely.
Yep. And then we have a new house high for Blazing Star. I think we've only got a few scores put in, but so far Eddie has the best score. 937-340 is the current house high on Blazing Star. So we'll see how long that stands. Some of the schmuppers might sink their teeth into that.
Yeah.
I
think Blazing Star was one that kind of snuck in in the mad rush to get to our 500th game.
Yeah, right before Argus, yeah.
Right before Argus.
Yeah, that one in Fighter's History Dynamite.
Yes. And since then, Paul Star went up, which I don't think anybody's put in a score yet.
Sean Quigley has.
Sean Quigley has?
He's the only person that has.
Well.
Yeah. So he has the house high. So next we have Gorz, Pete Gorz, putting up 697,730 on Edward Randy. I believe that he's either 1cc'd already or has gotten super close. At that time, that was a world record. I know that Jamie came in the next Monday and ended up getting the 1cc on it,
mm-hmm.
and toppling his score just barely. But shout-outs to those two guys for really digging into that game quickly.
Absolutely.
Then we had Norbert come in on the 13th. That's that was the same day as the Argus event, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He had beaten Haruza's Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition score, 1.6 million, which has stood, and Haruza has claimed he's going to take that back. We haven't seen that yet, though.
I've seen him on it
a couple times. Yeah, he's been on a couple times. We'll see if he can get that back. But for now, congrats to Norbert. He's got it for now. We had James White set a new house high on Mario Brothers, 177,200, also on the 13th. And then the following Monday, on the 14th, is that the 14th? Yeah. We had, that's when Jamie did the 1cc on Edward Randy. And that's all we had for that Monday, right? That was
yes.
Monday, okay. That's strange, because usually there's a lot more scores on Monday. And then James upped his own Make Tracks house high later in the week. That's going to be on the 17th. He's got 40,070 on that. And you put up a new house high, or AKA world record, on Sky Cursor.
Yes.
Which is the complete level 3 version now.
Yes.
And I believe Scott at Retro K put a bounty on it already.
I saw that.
Yeah. I think he wants
that.
The score to go over there.
It's good to want things.
Yeah. Good to want things. Build character.
Sure.
Yeah.
Huge shout out to the Sky Cursor guys. Ours was actually down for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
They shipped us a new build, and we just received a new flash drive today. So Sky Cursor is back up and running. So,
cool. You beat your score yet?
I have not played a full game of it yet.
Okay.
So, cool. On the list of things to do.
Cool. All right. Now we're up to the 18th. Mossy's put up a new world record on Truxton 2, 421,450. That barely edges out Pete Gorza's score that he did, that he gave him the card for. We had a new world record on Rampart by Ian Choice, 16,348. Congratulations. That was on the 19th. And then the following Monday, we had Tim Broderick reclaim his Mace the Dark Age score from Aaron. He's got over 5,000 now. He's 5,386. He's getting to the last guy now. He's really close to 1cc'ing that, so good luck to him in beating that game.
Absolutely.
And then just this Saturday, I was not here for this. I didn't see this. Or was it Sunday? I'm sorry. It was Sunday. David Greenhouse, who is a expert of Pengo, came in and smashed the three-person world record. He put up 455,340, and I believe there's some footage that Haruza captured for that as well. So we'll be having that on YouTube sometime soon. But he runs a Pengo blog. I believe he tries to play Pengo at all the arcades he can get to. And I haven't read the blog yet, but if you're interested in the game, we'll link it in the description.
Cool.
Next up, we have Mike Vinicour increasing his Argus world record, 359,700. That's the 27th. And then just recently, James beat his beat the Star Castle world record. He had the house high already. It was a little under 29,000, but he had beaten John McAllister's world record, which has been held for 7 years. He now has set the bar at 30,260.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
very impressive.
Yeah, that's awesome, James. I know you were working on that for a while, so it's good to see that pay off. And then just recently, Mossy's took the house high from James, I believe, held it before, in Alien Syndrome, 961,000 even. And that basically catches us up for scoring.
Awesome.
Lots of scores.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at the list of games that people are put, just that small list, like there's 504 games over there now. Most of those, at one point or another, have had some sort of issue either before they went on the floor or now, which kind of leads us to these two gentlemen here that are such an integral part of making this place work.
Yeah.
Seth Young, who's our...
He's our lead tech.
Lead tech.
Thank you.
And Mr. Doug Fox.
Who's the lead offsite tech.
Yes.
I've been called worse.
Well, and
hopefully better.
And I can't say enough about both you guys and everything that you've done to make this place succeed and work properly. And I see it on a daily basis how everybody enjoys all these games, and they don't even think about like the different levels of it. And what you bring to it and making them all work is just incredible. And I, even though I know I tell you guys thanks every time I see you, it's just never enough.
I appreciate that.
Well, it's much deserved, and I know both of you have been doing it for a long time.
47 years for me.
47 years.
47 months for
me. That's older than both of you combined.
Well, and when we opened this place, it was, I picked up 114 machines, and 8 of them turned on. So it was a, and I had torn apart arcades and worked on them a bunch, but the, in the 6 years now, I've seen tons and tons of stuff. I can only imagine what both of you have seen over, like, in 47 years. Right. You're going to see some stuff. And Seth, I know you've, why don't we start, where else have you
worked on games
before?
I started at a little podunk arcade out of college in St. Charles, in Charlestown Mall, and it was a remote arcade from a chain emporium out of Farmingdale, New York. So they had no, there was nobody around here. Like, there was no home base, or, you know, I couldn't call anybody, and I just had to figure it out for myself. It was all the back of the warehouse games, and they didn't send parts or wire harnesses. I just had to make the stuff and kind of piece it together. And it taught, or I learned a lot of little innuendos about games and
the workarounds.
Yeah, and it was valuable lessons. I I ended up going to work at ESPN Zone for American Vending, and I did that for about 5 years. Before I took I worked at another couple of arcades here and there and staged at a few out of state for a few days because you gotta. I even fixed a couple of games at a movie theater that I went to go see a movie at, and three of the four games they had there were down. And I just said, who fixes these? And they were like, nobody. I was like, you want to pay me for a couple hours? And I got two of them working again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, but it was a mob. It was an outfit gig, and it wasn't very appreciated by the guys on Cicero Avenue that I did that. I got a visit a week later. I was working at an arcade in Algonquin, and they sold some things to Jeremy Fox, and I became friends with Jeremy Fox, and then he brought me over here, and now I'm here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Huge shout-outs to Jeremy for that. It was when we were, since we opened, we've had people come in who say they know what they're doing on this stuff, and it quickly put me in a state of, nobody's touching any of these machines. And just because I've seen so many bad techs who think they know what they're doing and they're more detrimental. I could see with both of you, it was like clear that, yeah, okay, these guys are, they can get in the cabinets. And
we've both seen games that people that touch them that shouldn't have.
Just hacked them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's brutal. It's job security for me.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But it's just brutal.
Yeah.
And literally, almost every time we talk, you tell me of something you've seen, and it's just like, wow, that's...
Well, I do jukebox, pinball, slot machines, video games, all that, and probably a third of my work is people doing things they shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking things, shorting things, overfusing, and creating fire. I don't understand it. My opinion is if you don't know what you're doing, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So after my electrical engineering degree from Champaign, I started my company, and I've never worked for anybody. Well, I worked for Dairy Queen dipping cones in chocolate dip for about a year when I was 13. Other than that, it's just for myself, and I pride myself in doing stuff that really nobody else can fix. Some of these oddball boards that Doc gives me, that there's no documentation, there's no information, and he says, fix it. So I've got to figure it out. So I use my experience and thinking a lot, and I generally get them fixed.
Yeah.
And it's very satisfying for me, not so much for the money, but just bringing something back to life.
Right.
That was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really satisfying. It's really cool.
Yeah, you get that instant gratification. It didn't work, and now it does.
It's a minor doctor complex. That's what doctors go through.
Yeah.
Except doctors kill people, we can always
bring games really back to life. Yeah.
So it's a big, and it's interesting. It's very interesting, and everything is different.
It's always something new. It's never the same thing.
Occasionally.
Yeah, but then when it's the same thing, then it's fun to do it again. Yeah. Here, I can do it better this time.
It's logic problems in these boards are extremely elusive because it's not the same as something goes in one side and comes out the other side, and you find out where it doesn't come out. It's loopback circuits, it's all kinds of stuff, and you have to think. Fixing games is easy, troubleshooting's hard. The actual repair is usually not so bad, but it's finding out what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like
our most recent down game.
Yes, which was incredible. I think I spent 16 hours on the logic board.
Wow.
And then another two, after I put it in, it had no sound, and now it's perfect.
Yeah. Is that, and you said that's definitely up there.
Oh, it's the worst thing I've ever done. It's the worst board I've ever fixed in my life.
Was someone mess with it first, or what
no,
happened?
No, it's... No. The design of it is unlike anything else, okay. So the logic circuits don't make sense with what I think they should be doing.
Okay.
Once I figured all that out, I was able to deal with it. And my test equipment, I have a shop full of equipment. I can test almost any board, unless it's a weird connector, then I have to make a harness adapter. And XY or Raster, which are two different kinds of games. And almost 100% of the time I can fix. Sometimes not repairable, but not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really satisfying, and it's fun. And working with you, Doc, is wonderful because you're smart, you know what you're doing, and you make the right decisions and make it easier for both of us.
Thanks. It's been like having like people to work with and talk to, and has just made it so much more fun. And there are stuff that I've known is going to be a challenge to get up and running. Like, there are bringing stuff in from overseas, and there's zero documentation on it. Like,
or zero English documentation on it.
Yeah. It's so tremendously difficult. Like, a current game that you have of ours, there's not even a listed pinout that I could find. And you're right there with it and getting it running. And it's amazing to think that, like, so many of these games might have been lost. Looking at talking with operators and stuff and going through warehouse raids and seeing what games were people have just thrown on a bonfire and been like, oh, it wasn't repairable and it's just done for. And both of you are able to bring virtually everything back. And there's been a couple of games where it's like, don't put your time on that one just because the board's...
Cost-benefit analysis. Sometimes we could buy a new board for a whole lot less than we could than the time we could spend fixing it.
Absolutely. When we never get rid of anything, we always hold on to everything and reuse what we can. But it's really something that's kind of steered the scene on so many different levels, like not only on the operator level but the collector level as well, because these games are still out there now thanks to you guys and what you do and your immense amount of talent and skill and patience to kind of look at and analyze the problems and just working on anything for 16 hours is tedious. And
I thought some bad things about you.
You have to love it. I love doing this. This is the only job I'd ever actually want to command money for.
You have to avoid frustration. You have to avoid frustration because it can get to you. I just get up. If it happens, I just get up and walk away.
I'll do something else for a while. That's and then
right.
I come back.
That's right. Go for pizza.
Yeah.
And then come back and then look at it again. And something clicks.
Well, and also seeing you two work together on stuff has been really cool. Like, I've seen people who in-house are supposed to work together and they just, like, butt heads all day long, and it's never anywhere. The cohesion between you two is just awesome.
I don't see any ego. It doesn't exist.
Right? Yeah.
We both have the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's right. You do what you have to do to get to that goal. You had a game recently where one of the opening scenes was all garbled. And I fixed the board. It took a long time, and I got it running, but I could not figure out why that screen was garbled. And I had no way of finding you. Did contact someone who remembered a certain jumper, which there's no way I would have figured out, and it fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to rely on other people, which is fine with me. But I wouldn't have figured that out.
Well, that in itself was such a... And you're referring to our Argus cabinet, which was such a group effort from so many people. Like, even from the concept of it. This is a game that was supposed to come out in 1982 and was canceled. Was brought up at a Wizard World show by Jeff Lee and Tom Malinowski. That they had this game that was seemingly lost. Somebody else had backed up the ROMs, and we were able to write new ROMs and get original hardware and get a board together, and the board had all these problems and you fix those, and then even wiring up the cabinet. Like, it was, as with everything, we were scrambling until the last few minutes, but what an amazing collective effort to get the title screen working and
the trackball working.
The trackball and everything. Yeah. It's just like, it's those stories that people miss, and
when they just stand in front of a machine.
Yeah, they're enjoying it and having fun, but they really, they do. They need to thank both of you guys for everything that you do, just because any arcade you go into will have games that are down. It's a commonplace. It's going to happen. Monitors are going to go out. Buttons are going to go out. There's currently 504 games over there, and our up-to-down ratio is amazing.
Over 90.
Yeah, it's having less than 10% of the games down. With the amount of play that we get here, like, Pete, what's this week has been spring break.
It's been absolutely insane. Like, we opened at 1 o'clock, and we started recording, what, like, we went over here at, like, 4? We were over 210 admissions already.
Wow.
So, yeah. 3 hours, over 200 people through the door.
Yeah. I know. The other day, it was, we were open for 102 minutes, and we had 132 people through the door already.
Yeah.
And it's like, numbers-wise, like, you have to think of that as cabinet, like, looking at it in terms of how much use these games are getting. It's like, from the minute the door opens, people are on stuff, and it's such a varying degree of, like, you get people that are very respectful, but then you get people that don't know better that they shouldn't be slamming on buttons, and
most of the people that didn't grow up in arcades don't know how they should treat them.
Sure.
Yeah.
What's some of the most egregious things that you've seen over the years? Like, what, do you have any standout repairs that have,
on video?
Yes.
The worst one is probably, it's a Tempest, and, it was in a northern suburb. I went out there and I turned it on, nothing. So I opened it up. The logic board is a two-layer logic board, and it was broken in half. It was just broken in half. So I said to the guy, I said, what happened? We didn't touch it. I said, well, it didn't break itself. No, we didn't touch it. I said, okay, fine. So I put my tools away. Where are you going? I said, you're lying to me. It can't break itself. How am I going to... It doesn't happen. Well, we never opened the game up. I said, and it worked before? He says, yeah. I said, okay, fine. So I go out to my van, I get in it, and I see the husband come out, walk around, comes up to me, knocks on the window, and I said, can I help you? He says, can you do something for the game? I said, where are you talking? He says, well, I pulled the board out last night, I was going to fix it, I have no idea what to do, so in a fit of rage, I grabbed it and broke it over my bench. If I tell my wife, she'll kill me. I said, okay, so can you fix that? I said, no, I can probably find a replacement. And I did, and it was many hundreds of dollars. And that was about the worst as far as weird stuff. As far as damaged boards, you've given me those. Stuff that are hard to fix, and that's, I appreciate it. It's good. And if Seth and I do our jobs right, you were talking before, the people that play them don't know and shouldn't know what we went through. If you do our jobs right, they work and they play them. And that's really all the thanks that we need. All the thanks that we need. Is that someone's playing that, and I'm not watching, but they're playing it, and it's working, and they're enjoying it, and the original concept of that game, like Black Widow,
carries on.
It carries on. It's great. And it's not lost, like you said, to a bonfire or to history.
Yeah, I see. Like, I did a little bit of board repair and some edge connector repair on Sega Turbo, the game that was down for 6 months when I got here. And it's been working for 6 months now. And I get the greatest smile of seeing, like, five-year-old girls playing it and having a blast. It's like, it still works.
My favorite is seeing Doc walk up for the first time and see it work.
Yeah.
And that's
Because, you know, he appreciates
it. Well, he's customer zero. We got to please him first.
Customer zero.
Is there... What do you think has been one of the most satisfying things that you've fixed?
What was the last thing that I fixed? They don't really... Any kind of mangled piece of metal that has to move in a certain fashion.
Missile command.
That's okay. But like some kind of brake handle or handle yoke or some physical part that is completely looks destroyed and beyond repair that you can get it back together and it holds. Sometimes it doesn't. Like right now, we got a pod racer brake handle that I put back together twice that I got to refigure out how to. Reassemble.
But you don't give up.
Right. It's a new hurdle to cross. You know, there is no finish line in video games. You just get harder and harder. And, you know.
Probably mine is this one here.
The current.
I won't say what it is, but it's that was the longest I've ever spent on a logic board ever in 47, 48 years ever. And when I first turned it on, it's dead, gone, dead. So there wasn't even anything to trace because everything was bad.
Yeah.
But I just stuck with it. And Doc would email me, "How you doing on that?" once in a while, and I'd say, "It's coming."
Well,
and then the very first time when you get it done and it comes up and you got a picture, you think, "Wow, it was all that time. It was worth it."
Yeah,
it was worth it.
Oh, but I the same feeling when Death Race worked.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I fixed it!
I heard you yell across the arcade.
I could through the arcade.
I heard you from across the arcade.
Yep. It's working!
Well, we should be proud of ourselves because there's probably...
There's probably four
people of our caliber that can not wreck things and troubleshoot and fix some of these complicated boards, if that, anywhere. I know a couple other companies that say they can fix stuff. They can fix Pac-Man boards.
Sure.
And that's about it. Or simple stuff. But the ones where you have to think and build harnesses, they say it's just not repairable. And I don't accept that. Mm-hmm. For us, I don't accept that.
Right.
I just don't. Unless it truly is.
Well, there's, and again, as the hardware has evolved, there's some of the newer boards are just...
unserviceable.
Yeah.
Yeah. The motherboards on some of the computer games.
Dual-layer and triple-layer. You can't get it to the inside. It was pressed together by $80,000 machine.
Sometimes you can't get replacements.
Right.
So sometimes the game is not repairable.
Is there anything that when it's down, you're just like, oh, this again? Like, you've seen it before. You know it's going to be... Is there anything that's just like... I don't want to do this one.
Time Traveler. That's kind of a common down game for us.
Well, anything with a laser disc.
Yeah.
That's
a different world.
Right.
Laser disc is like it's like the elephant in the room. Like, everyone knows it's going to go down.
Yeah, like, you can tell when the collector's market has made new parts to get rid of...
We've made those ROM boards, yeah.
Yeah, there's a new Dexter is the new replacement for the Laserdisc players. And for me, I've looked at it, and I just can't give up on those Laserdisc players. And
they weren't designed to run this long. They didn't last this long. They were designed to last 3, 4, 5 years, maybe. Right. Not 20.
Yeah,
but they didn't even work 3, 4, or 5 years.
Right.
Not those Philips players.
It's terrible. Well, because they were designed for a 2 or a 5 or 10% duty cycle. Something very
in a house.
Yeah, you watch a movie. You don't watch a movie the other 23.5 hours a day.
Right. Yeah. Here they just run and
for
run
12 hours straight.
Well, until they stop.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Until they stop. Right. But then it comes down to the other aspect of just finding one that hasn't been run for 30 years. And
well, parts are difficult too. Some of the parts are not obtainable, and some are.
Well, and that's... Parts is such an interesting thing. Like, we have... as technology has... Like, harnesses and stuff, where it's all mostly wire, and it is time-consuming and tedious to make new harnesses. And I know I've asked you, both of you, to make countless harnesses for... seemingly stuff that's going to be one-time use only. And again, you guys never hesitate to do it. But there's stuff like we've had triggers fail. And now as technology has grown, we're able to 3D print new hardware. And it's just amazing, like, how there's always a workaround for something.
No, there's usually a workaround. There are some times where there is no workaround.
Yeah.
And that's where you find the carriage bolt stuck all the way through the side of the gun with the screw out one side.
The laser disc players, of all my test equipment, which is incredible, I don't have anything to fire up or run a laser disc player or feed it signals because I don't care. Yeah. I can't put time into something that's may not stay running if I fix it, and it's different enough where I can't use anything that I have to troubleshoot it. So I just don't.
With so many new arcades opening, there have been techs, people that call themselves techs, kind of surfacing. With having to, and I know, again, with so many of the boards being difficult to work on that we bring up, I know everybody asks around and we look online to see if there's any information, and it is a very good, there's a solid community of people who want to help. Whether or not they're able to help is a different thing. How do you kind of like vet out who is a reliable source of information?
Everybody could be, and it's just when you verify what they have to say. It's you can get good information from anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's, I have to wait to hear if it's, or confirm it with another source.
Or if it's valid.
Yeah, to see if it's valid. Yeah. Some people will tell you stuff that appears to be true, but they don't know what they're talking about, and will just, nod and smile and walk away.
They have the best intentions, but...
Right, yeah. You just can't, you gotta kind of be skeptical about it all.
But if I did have problems and I didn't know how to fix something, and I knew someone that did, I have no ego, no trouble giving it, say, okay, help me out, fix it. I ask people all the time. Yeah, I have no problem doing that. I certainly don't know everything. And if someone says, hey, I know this, 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 I say, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Or give me some clue or help me.
Right. Because it's black and white. There's no gray area. The game works or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't work, you clearly haven't done enough to fix it. So it's like...
With fixing the games being... And this was one of the things for me when anything is down. Like, the priority goes to fixing it before applying it, obviously. Like, but do you guys have... any particular games that you totally did playing? Like, not being behind it, fixing it. Like, what are some of the games that are like...
I like Qbert and Tapper.
Qbert and Tapper?
And that's about all I can handle.
I got two games, too. Death Race and Bubble Bobble.
I could have guessed
that. Yep, that's the only two I play here.
I think you have 3 scores on Arcade, and those are 2 of them.
Yep. And I... put the other few scores in just so that when I break the world record on Death Race, I'm not just a nobody out of nowhere. That I've got a few scores and some kind of history.
Cool.
Oh, Burger Time. That's another one. Yeah. It's so stupid, it's really fun. Well, it is. But it's fun.
It's a lot of these games.
Is there any game that you see it and you're just like... you fixed it, like, in here especially. Is there anything particularly on the floor that you've worked on that you've, are just, like, generally, like, man, that was so cool to fix. I love that that's working right now.
Every time I come here, what are the 3 games I look at?
Star Trek?
Because it was...
Mega Race?
No, that was you.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Mega
that
Race.
Was you. That was kind of you.
And then the Battle Zone, Black Widow, and the one next to Star Trek.
Tempest.
You were looking at Freeze for a while.
Oh, yeah. But I stopped looking because it's still working.
Right. Yes.
But those other ones, when you text me, I always think, well, I wonder if one of those names are going to be in his email.
Freeze was an interesting one. You were not willing to promise that one was going to be back up and running. Only because it was a prototype game. And
we had no idea where the ROMs went in the physical board.
But I did.
Yeah,
I figured it out. And it's never given any trouble. There was a sound issue on something. Was that another game?
Everything hiccups for a day.
Right.
Even us.
I've got
especially
a
with all the dust in the back of the machines.
Yeah.
And the mold.
Mm. Yeah.
In the cabinets.
Well, it becomes hot. Sometimes they're in somewhat humid environments, and there's not a lot of airflow.
Is that where that cabinet smell comes from?
Yeah.
It's just the mildew.
Or nicotine.
Yeah.
That's also horrible.
Because nicotine is polarized, and we get attracted to electronics.
Okay. Horrible.
I did not know that.
And it's conductive.
Yep.
So it can cause trouble with the boards, too. It's conductive.
Great.
The film.
Good thing we don't love smoking.
Yeah.
If I were to ask both of you, if you had any advice on the technical end for people opening a new arcade, what would you tell them? There's a lot of arcades opening.
Yes.
What would
and
be your advice?
Many don't have techs.
Yeah.
Don't call us. No.
Radio Shack makes a book called Building Power Supplies, and the first 15 pages of it are like the most comprehensive AC and DC electrical theory that I got. It was like the first year and a half of DeVry is in the first 20 pages of this book called Building Power Supplies. Hmm. And to have the visual representation of AC versus DC and current versus voltage and how to test, you know, where to find the voltage and where to find a good ground and why ground is important, because electronics run on electrons. It all comes through the negative side, really. That would be I was a little angry when I bought that book my senior year because I paid $20,000 to find out what an $8 book they had all in one place.
I would say learn your test equipment. Learn logic theory in addition to the stuff that Seth mentioned. Learn logic theory so you know what all the chips do or are supposed to do. And don't guess. Just don't guess. Whether it's something simple like putting a plug on a cord, make sure you put the ground on there, etc. Just think about what you're doing and don't rush. And don't guess. Because if you guess, you can make things so much worse.
If you're not leave it to a pro.
If you're not prepared to put it together and take it back apart because you missed one screw, and then put it all back together and then take it all back apart because you missed a light bulb, like, just don't get frustrated.
Yeah, we've never done that, right?
I've done it three times today. Like,
only twice for me. So just think. And if you really don't know what you're doing, don't try to fix them. Because you're going to
create
more
an account on tech forums. There's plenty of people that are sitting at a computer waiting for you to ask them a question.
KLOV.com is
sometimes it's valid information, sometimes it's not.
Right.
At least you get a different perspective then. You might not see something.
Right, exactly. It's a third set of ears or eyes.
It's just fine. The test equipment, I can't even tell you how important that stuff is, because all the stuff I fixed for you, except for the common JAMA stuff, everything has different connectors, different pinouts, different wiring. And so I have to build, with my PAT 9000 tester, I have to build a harness for every single board so I can test it. And that takes an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes. But if that ever comes up again, plug it in. Mm-hmm. So I probably have 150 different adapters now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So otherwise, this last one here. There was nothing. There was nothing for that. So I had to build it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even edge connector. It was pins.
Yeah.
And so you just figure it out. Without a schematic, you can look at boards and you can tell what's supposed to go where. And then my test fixture, the PAT 9000, has a circuit in it, which is cool. If you hook up something wrong, it just turns off.
Right.
You can't wreck anything.
Right.
And that's really important.
Nice. That's
what? Good.
Because a lot of the stuff is... Well, I mean, I don't want to say a lot of it is, but there's a good deal more than a negligible amount of this is the last one in the world. Or, this is the only one that we're going to be able to come across in the next 6 months.
Sure. Yeah, we have prototypes.
Yeah, it's not like, we can't just go down to the Radio Shack and buy it anymore.
What if Doc gave me a board, said, fix this, and it's the only one anywhere?
And that has happened.
And I fix it, but am I going to take the chance of destroying it? That would be bad.
Yeah.
If I called you and said, that board, that's the only one in the world. It's
gone now.
Right. You'd say, So that's
no good.
One, avoid making things worse.
Yeah.
That's one of our rules. If you don't make things worse than they are.
And I've seen, I get a lot of people that come in and travel in because they are opening arcades and they need to learn this stuff. And there's not a great source for people to ask questions like that they've, aside from going into forums, which if you're not already into it, that can be intimidating. It's better to have, and I know, Seth, you've talked to countless people just answering random questions from random people who are like, oh, I have a machine at home. And usually, like, you take the time, you walk them through it, or you leave it, you do house calls, and you both do. Yeah. Obviously, you do, Doug.
That's all I do.
Yeah. Except with my mountain of boards.
I'm digging at the pile. Yep. There's just a couple more.
I do it.
There's always more.
I like to see people smile.
That's right. It might be helpful.
Yeah. This is entertainment. Yeah. Entertainment. It's education and info and challenging to me, but it's really satisfying seeing somebody else enjoy something.
From a hardware, like, what should people have? Like, what is, like, the starter kit of the, hey, I want to fix something?
You should have a VOM.
A Fluke VOM
meter. You should have a good dual-trace oscilloscope. Otherwise, you might as well go flip burgers at McDonald's because you don't know what's going on. You want to have something like a PAT 9000 or something that you can power up the boards and see if there's video and see what, have the power supplies. You need a good power supply, but the games are all different. They're not all the same. They're pretty much the same. But some use 1 voltage, some use 3, some use the 50,
7 volts.
Right,
or
the 15 volts, yeah. the Atari stuff. And you should, if you can, work with somebody for a while. What's that called? Interning.
Mm. And like apprentice?
Get
apprentice.
An idea of what, but there's no school for that stuff.
There was never a school for it.
No.
It was
you went to a school, but that's for the basics, and it's very important. You have to know what you're doing.
And that helped out extremely when I got out in the real, because I knew the theory behind what was all happening.
That's right.
We had somebody come in here who said he was a tech.
Cool.
And he's going to help with some stuff. And he was going to discharge a monitor. And he grounded himself. He had his alligator clip, and he clipped it to the wood.
Of the cabinet. Even I know that's bad.
And he was reaching for it. I'm like, hold up.
Not going to do anything.
That's not grounded. That's, yeah.
Oh, it would do something.
Sure, it would go right through him, through the carpet.
It would kill him. Could kill him.
Stopped him before he did it. Asked him what he was doing. It's just like the very basic knowledge is.
People have been killed, by the way, working on monitors.
Easily.
We've had.
It's 20Ks, 20,000 volts.
That's why we yell at kids to go behind the rows, in case people are wondering.
Oh,
it's really
yeah.
important that kids don't go back there.
Right. There's backs on the games, though. So.
Yeah.
Even
they should have all backs on them.
We've had a...
They can't read German. The Achtung sticker. It's giant red and thick. They're yanking it out.
Has there ever been a situation where you've been unsettled? Like we had a guy that was working on monitors, and he was... did something and was blind for 3 days from a shock that he took.
Oh, wow.
Has there ever been a time... I've reached into a cabinet and everything, the hairs on my arm are standing up. It's like, wait a minute, this is all on? Like, I'm going to kill myself here. Like, have you had any times that you've been, like...
One time I had to swap chassis in a... ping pong game, which is the third worst arcade game ever, and I might walk off if you
pong?
Ping pong.
Oh,
you
ping
see the
pong.
Ones you swing the paddles at the games?
Right.
It's terrible. You can just go like wiggle your wrist in front of the sensor. It requires no actual tactile input. But I had to swap chassis from one to the other to verify a few things, and halfway through my reinstallation of the second one, my boss came up and started connecting connectors at the same time, and I turned around to do something, and he plugged the machine in, and the flyback was off, and it arced a good 2 inches to the frame and took both computers out.
Wow.
Like, and we were both standing there watching a giant glow of lightning.
Did you get zapped?
No, I turned around, and he plugged the machine in. He goes, is everything hooked up? And you don't answer, is everything hooked up? You turn around and verify that everything is hooked up yourself, because you can't take everybody else's word for it.
Like the electricians that put the lockouts on the switches.
86. Mm. That's where the term 86 comes from. We easily blew up the two computers that were in the ping pong. From the flyback being off and grounding right to the chassis.
Yeah.
Took both motherboards down.
Probably me. Only one. It was a game. It was a pinball game. And it was 25 years ago. someone had ripped the ground prong out of the plug, and I was going to put another plug on the cord. So I thought, well, the cord's bad, I'll put another cord on it. So I was unplugged, I went to my truck, got a cord and my tools, and I went back into the game, and I was going to cut the cord to put a new one on. Well, the kid had plugged it back in.
Oh, no.
So I cut through a live line cord.
Yeah.
And it was this bright flash, it burned a notch in my cutters.
Oh, yeah.
And the cutters, although they're insulated, my fingers were on top of the insulation.
Yep.
So I got a pretty good shock in my hand.
Wow. Yeah.
And it flew out of my hand, and I sort of fell back onto the floor. I thought I unplugged this. And the kid said, oh, mister, I plugged it in for you. So that was the only thing, but that was probably my fault. I should have looked again, but I unplugged it.
I think the funniest instance was, it wasn't a game that I was working on. I was at a go-kart track in Indiana or something at a roller hockey tournament, and they had bumper cars. And I'm standing in line looking over the edge at the surface of the bumper cars, and I could see this very faint outline of some vice grips on the surface. Well, you know, about, like, it's double conductivity.
Oh, shit.
Traces. Somebody just was out working and hadn't turned the electricity off and dropped a pair of vice grips on it, and it arc welded. They ended up having to grind it off. And that's what was left over, was the shadow of the vice grips from closing the two contacts.
Nice.
Wow.
You can get hurt.
Yeah. Better to call a pro that knows what they're doing than mess with it.
Electricity runs 80% of our infrastructure, and less than 0.1% of the people know the first thing about it. It's invisible. 150 years ago, it's magical to everybody on Earth. Any technology that's significantly advanced of your understanding is indistinguishable from magic. And that's what it kind of is to our population today, because they just didn't get that side of the math in school. And so it's invisible magic. You don't actually get to see any of the stuff we do. We have to use probes and meters just to see it at individual points.
Well, you can feel it sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't.
Hopefully
it jumps up and bites, but it never talks.
It does bite you sometimes. I had a lady many years ago, had a Q-Bert. I went downstairs, and it was unplugged, so she had the plastic caps, the kid-proof caps. So I pried it out, plugged the game in, and it was a power supply. So I got everything working fine, and she said, I went upstairs, did you put the plastic cap back in? And I said, no, I didn't. She said, could you please? I said, okay, you must have grandkids. She says, no. I said, well, there's caps everywhere. She says, she knows for sure. Somebody told her that the electricity leaks out of the outlets into the room.
Oh, no.
If there's not caps in there. And she certainly wasn't dumb. She just didn't understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said, well, and I thought, do I really want to get into this?
It's not a value.
So I said, yes, ma'am. I went down, put it back in, she paid me a lot.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what you said. Right. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
And it isn't from ignorance either.
Oh,
it's just something that, it's just not a really lot that they never walked around on their tour of the neighborhood. So
I agree. That's pretty funny, though.
Cool. Well, Pete, did you have any other questions, or?
Not really, no. Not on the tech end of things. Is there anything you guys want to add or tell customers, or?
Like, they're definitely an interested audience. They, like, we've run wiring classes, and usually a fair amount of people come out to those. And I don't know, maybe it'd be great. Maybe one day in the future we can have both you guys do
that'd
like
be fun.
A
sure.
tech class tech or something.
Be fun. That would especially be awesome. Hands-on, where we have a game open and can show them what to do and what not to do.
I did that at a friend of mine's house, where I went to go install a monitor, and they were like, well, we got a whole bunch of people from an arcade. And I was like, bring them all over. And I went through 45 minutes of the basics of how to change your power supply and what not to. And I ended up having to pull the monitor off the harness or off the frame and just install the tube and the chassis. And so there was a whole little section on how to take a chassis out, you know. And that's pretty universal. It applies pretty much across the board to many different types of chassis. So,
how long were you doing this before you were like, okay, I can tackle most everything now?
3 years.
Yeah, years.
Couple of years.
Couple of years before years.
But I'm still learning. Every service guy, I have 5,500 customers. Okay, every time I go on a game, for the most part, I still learn something.
Yeah.
Except or see something you haven't seen before.
Well, that's because stuff's getting older, too.
Right, exactly.
And things are failing that never failed.
Yeah.
In the early days, 5X didn't fail. because they weren't that old. Mm-hmm. So, and I also have no trouble telling someone how to fix it or showing them for fear of losing a job type thing. No, it's we're spreading the knowledge and keeping the industry alive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's wonderful.
It used to be very hush-hush because they needed to keep, I don't want to call it sensitive technical information, but it was sensitive at the time because you could easily replicate that stuff aftermarket and make a bootleg board. Now that we're well beyond the marketable history for these games, at least the design company side of it, now all the information, everybody is throwing it at each other to keep the stuff working.
With a couple of exceptions.
Yeah.
The Sega stuff, the Capcom stuff, mm-hmm. some of the boards were designed with the battery. When the battery dies, the board's junk.
Yeah.
The suicide.
That was to prevent piracy, or is that to prevent... Just they just wanted you to buy another game after 5 years when the battery died.
No, it lasts 20. The batteries last a long time.
Oh, okay.
They're lithium batteries, right. But when they fail, the software is encrypted.
Right.
And the battery held in the processor, it's called a program storage unit, the decryption table. So when it loses the battery power, it can't read the software because it just can't decrypt it. It's so dumb.
And I know that CVS2
that's
bit
rot right there. That is the prime example
of dumb.
Bit rot.
Yeah.
We're eventually going to have a whole bunch of data and no computers to understand it.
It's so dumb. Now, there are ways around some of it. The Suicide Society or whatever it's called, they have ways that they figured out to get 80% of these games up and running, but not all of them.
Yep.
But 80% of them. And since the company's gone, they don't care. Yeah. But that's just a bad idea to do something like that.
Well, in that the process of getting rid of the suicide battery and phoenixing a game,
rise from your grave.
that was something I don't think you had run into before.
No, because the batteries are okay.
Right. Yeah,
they last 20, 25 years. They last a long time.
Really, extra low current.
A long time, but when it's dead, you're dead. Now, what I've been doing is if the game works, I solder in a tap on the board with a good battery, take the old one out while the power is still going to the board, then install a new battery, good for another 20 years. But if you get it and it's dead, it's too late.
Yeah.
Those red or the blue and black ones, some of those
are that's the CPS2.
I did a dinosaurs and something for you.
Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
That one's just ridiculous. That was ours.
Yeah.
But someone is figuring that stuff out. Someone's always smarter than me and can figure stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
And then you take advantage of it. Then when they ask you for something, you help them.
Oh, and the one that we had two in a row of that, I think we also gave you our Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
That you fixed. And the first one took you a little bit, and the second one it was just like instantly back. And it's like, it's so clear that you absorb the knowledge, and again, both of you, it's like something will go down, and the people that come here and play, they don't even sometimes see that a game is down because you're so quick to, you know what you're doing, you're so on top of it.
Well, otherwise you keep sending me emails. That's the only reason. No. You're always learning, you know, we're always learning this stuff. If this thing here, this game ever goes down, I have enough experience. I don't want to ever fix it again. But I'll have enough experience where it won't be that much time. It won't take that much time.
Yeah.
But even the feeling of never wanting to fix it again is good because you put more time in fixing it the first time.
Yeah.
There's the redundant check.
But as you know, you can't guarantee every part is going to keep working.
Right.
Parts that were working, stop working.
For sure.
And although the game doesn't work, it's not the same problem. It's the same symptom, not the same part.
Mm-hmm.
You get into a car. If the battery fails, you get a new battery, it won't start, it could be the starter.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. But I just have to say for us, it's thinking before you do anything. Put your hands in your pockets and look and think before you start doing things, because then you have a better idea of what you're getting into.
And I never, when a game A would break and I would fix it, and 6 months later, game A would break again. As I'm walking up to the game, I remembered that I fixed it 6 months ago, but I strike that from my consideration that, oh, this is the same problem. I'm going to go in and blah, blah, blah. You can't, I don't think about anything when I'm walking in. I just huh, this doesn't work. I start with the AC. Is the fuse there? The fuse is good. Follow the AC. You know, like, you rethink everything because it's never what you think it is.
But I do keep a ledger. I have a big, thick notebook of stuff like pinouts of weird games and parts I've seen fail multiple games, so I don't have to re-troubleshoot everything. And sometimes that helps.
Right.
The Williams games, like the Defender series, there's common failures.
Yeah.
And I rely on the book because I can't remember everything.
I mean, if a joystick breaks, or let's see, there was a good one. Wizard of War has a four-way joystick in it instead of an eight-way, so there's only two bits for the direction. And they don't... And the directions come in on a stream. So if one of the contacts is closed, other contacts won't work because the one of them is stuck. Well, Wizard of War, this one, we happen to have it that the joystick was stuck down. So the first move you need to make into the game is up to step out of that safety box. So the whole controller looked like it didn't work because it was stuck down. You couldn't take the first step to step up. We ended up letting the game sit for like 4 or 5 months because the guy I was working with was convinced it was a bad board, and he was looking for more boards and looking for more boards. What's going on with that? Well, you know what? Let me go over there and look at it. All I did was swap the input of the left and right joystick. It came right back because now I'm working with... He never tested the other joystick. It was fine. Mm-hmm. So I put the other joystick on the second player's side, and that one came back. I'm like, it's a joystick problem. We went underneath. It was it was bent because somebody had jammed his hand in there trying to get the latch under, mm-hmm. And it bent. It was no joke. I went, and the whole game was fixed. Because you don't think that you know the problem.
That's right.
You just follow what's going on.
Never assume.
Right. No.
Pinball machines are multiplexed. There's 64 switches, 8 rows, 8 columns. And whatever closes, the computer tells you a switch. It's the same thing. If you have one switch close anywhere in the game, you lose 8 switches. At least then you can look at the chart and figure it out. You don't assume anything, but these games are pretty brilliantly designed for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to try to think about the designers and think before you anything, just like you did with that joystick, Seth. You have to look at it and make some common sense, easy tries to fix it first before you start assuming it's horrible.
Exactly.
And you found it.
Right.
Is there any particular arcade hardware that you just do not like?
Well, Laserdisc, you already said.
I
love Laserdisc because I don't have to fix them. Oh, well, I just buy another one. No, optical stuff, because it's usually the dust distance, gate wheels or optical tape for Super Shot. When the beam has got to bounce a certain direction and a certain direction back, can't stand that.
Well, game here, all that control handle, that's all optical stuff.
But what about those 49-way joysticks that are on some games? Those like Blitz,
yeah.
Those opticals?
Those are, but those are pretty hard packed.
Okay.
To where you just buy a replacement board at the bottom of it. The 49 ways are just 6 optics. Well, 6 real sets of optics that as you move it one side, some of them let go and some of them hold, and as you move it the other way.
Is it new?
What?
That kind of a joystick?
No, Arch Rivals had the same style, only it was a lot older.
Same
had
style
three,
as well.
Pardon?
Sinistar as well.
Yeah, there's 3 blocks, and it it covers certain optical gates as you move it farther away from center. So it's actually 3 positions to the right, 3 positions to the left, up and down. And that 7x7 grid makes 47 different positions. Slightly more sensitive than just a digital stick up and down.
Probably pole position, whatever hardware that is, I don't know what that board set is called, I don't like it when I see it. Because every IC socket has to be changed.
Yeah.
Every single socket has to be changed, and there's dozens of them.
And
90% of the time, that fixes the board, but every single one, they use single wipe sockets, and every one fails. And that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. to desolder and change all those sockets.
I found that they've over-engineered some of the electronics and under-engineered the way it's all gone together.
Okay, I agree.
Where just the way that certain cabinets are bolted together, it's not meant to be taken apart. Silent Scope 2 that we just dismantled, we ended up having to remove the speakers to unclick the speaker wire because there's no plug all the way back to the audio output on the board. Like, I cut 30 zip ties. How did they get this together?
They didn't think it was going to come apart.
Well, it's a two-piece cabinet. How did they ship it here? Like, that boggles the mind. How did they miss that? And I don't want to just cut it because then it's, you know, it's not original to sell. And I don't want to take the 15 minutes to put another plug on it because we're selling it. You know, like,
sometimes you have to, though.
Yeah. I took them out and just disconnected the wires so that, you know.
Sometimes you have to. Whoever designed all this hardware, and you know some of the people that did, for the most part, they knew exactly what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But the one-off weird stuff is done differently. The prototype stuff, some of it is, and you've got to think. You just got to think.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Hello?
No.
Jimmy Johns.
And I appreciate the opportunity to help you out and help me out and work with you guys. It's neat. It's really cool.
It's been an honor working with.
And your Diet Dr. Pepper is awesome.
When I was worked at ESPN Zone, I often called my job. I work in a room of 1,000 people by myself. Mm-hmm. Because there would be 1,000 people in the arcade. Mm-hmm. But nobody, even any of the employees, up to the management, even the guys that were working for me, nobody had any idea what I was doing. I couldn't explain anything that I was doing to people in the break room. It was just, you know, we're talking to 17-year-old hostesses. It's not even on their radar. It's just it's more refreshing to speak with people who are at least into it.
Well, and it's been, like, I loved work when it was just me. Loved working on all of them. We had Brandon come in, worked with him for I think 2 years. I know it was very difficult for him. He had to work more on productions, and he kind of stepped away from the repair side. And there are so few people that get it, and it is it's a skill that.
It's a niche skill, but it's needed.
It is.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. I've seen both of you fix things that it's like, oh, I want, like, Death Race was on my list forever to even look at, and I never even got a chance to look at it, and you had it fixed. And it's like, it's just awesome, though. Like, it's can't tell you the levels of appreciation. And
goes both ways.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was a gamer first, and then my dad was a carpenter, so there was the math and the physical stuff already, and that's what brought me to working on video games. I liked playing them. I liked fixing things. Why not fix video games?
I was never a gamer. Never, never, never. I played Nintendo NES in my living room when it first came out. And it doesn't do anything. I'm just not. I don't like playing these so much. I like seeing them played once I fix them.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, and obviously it's always much easier to work on stuff when there's nobody around.
That's what comes Saturday mornings.
Yes, but I do hope you do go out and take a look around at how much the people are enjoying.
I do.
That's awesome.
I've been here a couple of times. I like when someone's playing Star Trek. It's sort of a funny feeling. You're standing watching them play something, and you spend a lot of time getting work, and they're enjoying it. Same thing with you and your Death Race, whatever else you fix.
Omega Race.
Sure.
And Turbo and Pole Position.
It's great.
Now Missile Command, just anytime I repair something, I'm super enjoyed for the next week when I come back in and it's still working.
That's why I walk around and look at those. Battlezone.
Right.
I always walk back and say, it's still working.
It's been good for a while, man.
And since we just had somebody in here that put up a score of like 7 million points on.
It was a glitch.
It was a glitch, but she knows the glitch.
Yeah.
Oh,
the score on awesome. Glitch. Yeah.
Well, that's software, though.
That's not.
Yeah,
and we allow it, but we don't give them a score for it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you can do it, but it doesn't count.
It doesn't count toward the world record.
Yeah.
Is there a workaround for that? Is there software that works around that?
No.
No.
Was it just a dead spot? in the...
I don't even know.
Yeah, it's that one. We won't give the glitch away here.
Was it similar to Friday the 13th from NES? Because Jason used to like walk up and knife you, and if you stood like right in front of him, he would miss you every time. Yeah. You couldn't die at the hardest boss in video games.
I will say that I already posted how to do it in productions.
Oh, okay.
I think Steven Lucas made a post about, holy cow, look at the score. And then it was like, I'm sorry, I have to take it down due to this glitch. And then I put a link in there.
Yeah.
That's only fair.
Yeah, why not?
That's only fair.
Yeah. Fortunately, that's not something that we have to worry about fixing.
We can't.
Right.
Yeah, we can't. That's going
to
burn
it. Well, that's,
ROM.
Yeah.
Well, we could burn the ROM, but it's getting what to write to the ROM. Exactly. That's the problem. Bit rot is. You can have a ton of data, but if there's nothing to read it, the data is meaningless.
Yep.
You have that game that crashes because the software wasn't completed. What game is that?
RC Squared.
You can't do anything about that.
Right. Yeah.
You're proud to have the game in it.
Well, we can ask Brian.
Brian to rewrite it.
Yeah. Where's that? Well, and the weirdest thing is Larry DeMar just had a ROM upgrade after 30 years for Robotron.
Yeah.
The tie-dye ROM set.
Yeah.
And it's like there was a glitch where...
there's one pixel you could shoot, and if you hit it, the game would, I think, reset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he fixed it.
Yeah.
And he fixed the score, the way the score worked, because it would roll over.
Oh, yeah, with an extra digit or something.
Yeah. And the lives counter, because it would eventually just cover the whole bottom, so he fixed that, too. It's like...
oh, or it would go to, like, multiply.
It would just put a number.
So, all right. Instead of actual dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something really cool that... again, we're so fortunate to have access to the creators and developers of these games, and
we're kind of in a good hotspot for that.
Yeah.
Software is beyond us.
Yeah.
It's a software problem. I don't have any ability to do anything, and I don't think you.
No.
We can't do anything.
I can recognize when the software's not.
Oh yes,
doing
absolutely.
What it's supposed to.
But to fix it,
don't
know how. We don't know how. So we rely on other people like them to do that.
They have the compilers.
Right.
We don't have access to that. Which is good, because that would consume
all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's probably terribly time consuming.
I stopped code with my graphic calculator. That was about it.
Well, that's, again, I can't thank you guys enough for not only what you do here and for making so many countless people that come here and play happy by having games that are up and running, but for the bigger community and even the people that you help outside of this place. And it's you guys should be acknowledged for your skills, and just thank you for everything that you do.
It's our job.
Well, thanks. I appreciate for having it. The places to do it at too.
Exactly.
It's just
equal, I appreciate you.
It's give and take. Cool. It's hard to more than half the arcades I worked at, the owners didn't love the games, and when you don't love the games, you don't buy new ones. When you buy cheap replacements, or you get knockoff multi boards that run just that one game. Like, there are so many shortcuts that could be taken that we don't take. We want the original stuff running.
And I know I make things probably harder than it needs to be sometimes with some of my personal preferences on things.
Those are options I didn't consider. I would have done it this way, but and guess what? I don't have to. I'll do it this way. It's fine.
And if the game had black wire in it, use black wire. It's very simple.
I had a problem with that for about 8 seconds. Like, when I was doing Zookeeper, or Anteater, whichever one of those that had the...
I think it's both of them, actually.
And then after about 3 hours, when I have it all straightened out, whatever. It's all black.
I fixed that board, Zookeeper. I remember that game. Yes. But use the original colors in the game like you always do, and it's no problem.
It's that would be, if I hadn't have already been doing it for years and years, and you guys both came in and were like, hey, there's other wire that you can use.
Available.
It doesn't make any difference.
No.
It doesn't.
Well, again, I know we need to get on to covering some other announcements, but thank you both so much for everything that you do. And you have had such a tremendous impact in As we continue to grow, a lot of that credit has to go to you guys for keeping this stuff up and running. And we get people that fly in literally from all over the world, and we get so much praise. And I'm not shy about spreading that to you guys and what you guys do, because, again, we had Toru Iwatani, creator of Pac-Man, was here. Jeff Lee, creator of Q-Bert, Brian Cullen, like all these guys that made all these great games, like they need to know that you're part of what makes this place run and work, and we couldn't do it without you. So,
and we couldn't do it without you giving us the opportunity.
So it's both ways. Thank you.
It really is a pleasure.
Thanks for asking me.
Working for somebody who loves games as much as I do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Pete, what other stuff do we have to cover here?
We have some Facebook questions. And a couple just events that we just want to remind people about. Let's do the announcements of the events first, I guess.
There are a lot, and I know a lot of those we've got to get ready for soon. They're coming up quick.
And next weekend is Midwest Gaming Classic already.
MGC.
I think people are petitioning what games they'd like to see. How do you feel about that?
I'm always up for requests for what we bring. Usually, honestly, we always have so much going on. It doesn't get decided until usually the day before. It's So we are packing up on Thursday this time. So definitely let us know, and we're happy to
consider
it.
So when you say packing up on Thursday, you mean we're going to be there Friday
right away? We will be there early on Friday.
Now, does the show's not actually open to the public Friday, though, right?
I don't know.
What's the website?
I've been told I will be loaded up onto a truck and will be packed in with the games and brought up there on Friday.
Cool. All right. What else do we have? We have Sega Week coming up.
I can tell you, on MGC, before I go, we will have with us, Brian Cullen's coming with us. We have some pretty cool things to announce with him. And we'll probably make an announcement beforehand. But definitely some big things to see at MGC with Brian Cullen.
Okay.
Jeff Lee and Tom Malinowski are coming with us. We will be bringing the Argus cabinet.
Okay.
And some new Galloping Ghost production games will be there.
Nice.
So, I believe me and you are doing a podcast there too, if I'm not mistaken, on Saturday.
We can, yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. So that's next weekend already. Oh my god. Okay.
Jeez.
All right. At the end of April, we have April 24th through 30th. We have Sega Week coming up. There's a lot of speculation going on.
Yes, I've seen a lot of the regulars
playing Sega games.
Playing Sega games. Mm. What do you think about that, Pete?
I don't know. There's been some good guesses.
Yeah?
Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see. Could be anything. Could be everything.
I think they're underestimating us.
Yeah.
I think they should know better.
Yeah.
And to try to prepare for something that we're going to do.
Nothing can prepare you.
Like
the Mortal Kombat 2 poster?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have twice as much floor space as you actually get to visit. There's other stuff we're working on.
Yeah. So there'll be some good stuff.
There'll be some surprises.
Yep.
Practice whatever you want.
I want a hot dog. I want a hamburger. I want a milkshake. You'll get nothing and like it.
Yeah. I love that one. So, yeah, those are the next two events. I'm sure I'll do another podcast probably before anything else comes up. We have some questions on our Facebook group, though.
Cool.
Well, Daniel Pacina chimed in right away and said if there's any complaints, he's going to handle them personally. That was pretty cool to see.
Huge shout out to Daniel Pacina. He was out here for our Argus event, which was really cool. We're talking with him about something cool that's coming up too. And not even looking at the list, but I would assume there's probably a when is Shang Tsung's fight night
question
coming up. MK Dan had messaged me earlier today. Shout outs to MK Dan from Luxembourg as to when the Shang Tsung's fight night event will take place. I still don't have an official date. I guess we can make an announcement here that we've made good progress on how the next two-part expansion is going to go. And that is going to predicate when Shang Tsung's fight night will happen, as that will be the only thing that will be giving us enough space to contain
Shang Tsung's
fight night.
Yeah.
So
events grown so much, we need the space.
Like if we have regular days where 798 people will show up, mm-hmm. I can only guess that the Shang Tsung's fight night will break 1,000 people.
That'd be awesome, and I hope it does. I think it will.
Yeah. And it's you look at this weekend. Today,
I mean, there could be over 300 people in the store now, and
easily.
It's a we were Thursday.
230 last time we
last
checked.
Time I checked, yeah.
And it's just any Thursday.
It's a Thursday, yeah.
The great part is with 230 people, there's still 270 games not being played.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
Yeah. Plenty of room. Get down here.
Yeah. Next, we have Christopher Cruz. It's from the Skycursor dev team.
Yes.
Asking, he's saying, judging by a lot of arcade enthusiasts' commentary, there always seems to be healthy peer pressure motivation for younger gamers to dig back into the classic era of games. I'm curious if you guys ever see this happening in the other direction, where more classic gamers are introduced to some of the 90s and later games. You guys seem to do a great job of paying attention to the JAMA era games, which is sort of glanced over by many in the hobby and industry.
I
think in general rule, like, we tend to balance them really well, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's, you look at the floor, and while you do, occasionally we have grooves of, we're putting up a lot of shmups, we're putting up a lot of this or that. Like, we're pretty solid. We have everything.
Yeah.
And plenty of it.
If you talk to a lot of the classic arcade high scorers, though, everyone thinks classics, though. Everyone's like, oh, I saw King of Kong. I think of Donkey Kong. I think of Pac-Man.
I think that's kind of what... It's just kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people are into classic game and scoring on that versus the community that just comes here and plays everything. Yeah. Like, definitely a lot of the shmups guys, they prefer the JAMA era stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the JAMA era is so much deeper. Like, the quantity that's in it, because of the compatibility, there are thousands of games that may not have made it to your local arcade that we can find and track down, and because it's not too off-standard, can get it get it relatively working with moderately...
The joystick and two buttons fit so many games of that era,
You know, it's
And that's one of those things that, even with Twin Galaxies, like, most of the stuff, like, we have hundreds of games on the floor that nobody's ever really tracked scoring on.
Yeah.
And everything here people have put scores in on.
Yep.
I think the, like, growing the scoring community, it's a very slow-paced thing, and a lot of it's just something that people have, it continues to grow. Like, every week there's a couple of new names added to the list of somebody trying a game that hadn't played it before, and
someone coming out to the Monday Mystery game that wasn't there before.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And this is also a product of, we didn't have the internet in the 80s. Yeah. This might have already taken place had the infrastructure of the internet and communications been already set up behind it. We didn't have that. So this is, we're like breaking ground in a classic arena.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we've had to, it's not about reinventing scoring. I think it's just kind of looking at it in a different way.
It's looking at them as equals. Like, everything is equal. It's not better to set a classic score than a modern score. They're both equally as hard.
Absolutely.
I think. I mean, that's just nice.
Even you look at the classics, there's so many games that the scores have fallen here. It's like, Star Castle. Like, that's
The Pit.
Mm-hmm.
It's fallen twice.
Yeah. There's so many games that... it's just a matter of getting them in front of players.
The right player to take that game, yeah.
Right, like the people that are really into scoring, like they've been doing it consistently since the 80s, and the new people that are getting into it, you can see as gamers they've grown so much and their skill set has changed. You look at a game like Halley's Comet, where Matt Rocco spent a lot of time his first few months here. He broke the world record that was set in 1984.
Right.
Or 86. That score stood for a long, long time, but he broke it within a few months.
Yeah.
But jump ahead 4 years, everybody broke it because them as players have grown in skill so much.
You help each other grow too.
Absolutely.
It could be the 100 monkey effect as
well.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's and we've discussed that before, like where as soon as somebody gets to that new plateau, that they all kind of, it just becomes the easier.
When you get to a plateau, you drag the eight players behind you.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Because they see how you did it. They learn from your mistakes. They learn from your success.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch a couple of MLG Call of Duty games. In my next few games, I rip people. Because I've just seen a few things that I didn't see before.
Yep.
Well, also, the mentality of the player. It's when they get into uncharted territory of the score. And Flicky is a perfect example with Danielle and John Monkus. Those first few times where they were breaking 4 million or 5 million, the intensity that it took for them to get there, and they were, both of them, you could see like there's the nerves that get in there. Now a 5 million game for Danielle, it's a throwaway game. She's upset with a 5 million game,
right,
even though she's only one of three people that can score like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting. It's I think scoring as a whole really needs to be examined on a much deeper level. And I think we're breaking the grounds here. And I think there's so many different levels of that people get hung up on, of Classic or JAMA or
semantics.
The semantics.
It's not really important on that. You can delete the game title and just say, this is world record. That's good.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the game title was,
yeah,
if it was Classic or if it stood for 30 years.
It's all important, and I think all of it should be tracked and looked at. And
a rising tide raises all boats. We all get better because the best players play here.
Yeah.
It's true.
Cool. All right, next question, Tim Foley. He's asked about my experience of playing Out of Your Element. And then he's also asking, when does registration start for T20? Any chance of extended hours for tournament participants?
Well, let's start. Well, you're out of your element, which is delaying the release of...
Tim, you're out of your element writing complete sentences. No, I'm just joking.
You know, I've been playing a few games, and I'm trying to get better at them, but I also have my project game that I'm working on. But my out of my element games I've been playing lately are Sinistar, which I haven't been able to beat my own personal best that in like 2 weeks. I've been trying to up that score to at least 100,000, and I'm not there yet. I tried playing Galaga 88, and I'm convinced I'm just awful at fixed vertical shooters. there's a few. I started playing Donkey Kong a little bit with Duke, not last weekend, but the weekend before. We did a two-player game, and he was giving me some pointers, so... So far, I've been playing those three. Those are the three I've been played that are, I believe, are out of my element. So,
but your goal is, you need to get 10 games.
Yeah, I want to make them good games, though.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Early when is the registration for T20?
Is it going to be an online open registration again?
Yeah, we will do online registration. When that will be, it will be soon. I've been thinking a lot about T20. Also, same thing. We want to make sure that we are set up to have a great spot for the tournament. We know what issues we had last year. I think it was a great tournament, but I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and we want to make this one just awesome.
Yeah.
Will we change the hours for it? Maybe. We'll see.
We'll consider it.
I saw a lot of people dragging themselves out of here.
That's just the grind, though. Like, you play games long enough and you're just going to get beat down, you know?
Right. But, what is it, 15 hours that they get to play per day?
That's a lot, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
Cool. All right. Jamie Tibbetch, Mups. Do we need A, more of them, or B, need way more of them? I think that he's trolling James a little bit with that question there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, there will be more shmups. Yes. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And but there will be no more bad shmups.
No, all shmups are good for the most part.
I can't think of a bad shmup on our floor.
There's a couple. There's a couple. Not, no, we don't have any, but there are a few bad ones.
Yeah. All right. Dan Acavelli is asking about any plans for Atari Week. We actually had one like a few... When was it? Last August was Atari Week. Yes. So we're not a year yet until Atari Week's supposed to roll around.
The one... yeah.
Mozzie's was quick to chime in saying he was crowned the ace of Atari.
Yes.
Which he was. So, let's see here. At the earliest will be August, because that's going to be the year on that.
It will... There's so many events. I think we're about 4 months behind on Sega Week. And I think where you missed Konami Week already.
We did miss Konami Week, which is my favorite company.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of... We run a lot of events here. It takes 3 years to have our annual events.
Yep. All right.
Data East Week will be coming in 2019.
It will. It will. We've got some really good Data East games coming up.
Cool. All right. Patrick Keska. Says needs more DDR. People were kind of knowing that was a joke, and it was a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but some people have chimed in saying that, like Norbert said, Doc has said long ago, DDR in the groove, pump it up, would not be a galloping ghost. And then people are like, just wishful thinking. Are they still not going to have any future here at this point?
There's a lot of it, again, comes down to space. Like, as the collection of games grows, we do want to have everything that people can want to play. And I know DDR it's got its own group of players.
Yeah.
It does. It does. It's kind of like, as far as maintenance-wise, it's definitely up there. I see issues with it. It's not an impossibility, but it's not anywhere...
Not happening anytime soon.
Not happening anytime soon.
It takes up a lot of space, it's very loud, and you need to have it run it in a cool spot that is somewhat insulated, because it'll dominate 75 feet in every direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because of just how flashy and bright... And you need to have space. There has to be a little bit of space. You can't cram it in. Like, our games touch side to side.
Can't do that.
Do that with this game. The dance pad is too wide. You got to have 3 feet behind. Like, it takes up the footprint of 8 games.
Yeah.
Right.
So, at the moment, I can see why, and I totally agree with it. Now, got myself a GX.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Mm-hmm. Mike Beal is asking when we're going to get Golden Tee 2028.
It wouldn't even be
perfect.
An option.
That's perfect.
Until...
In 2028.
Yeah. Okay.
We might, at that point, get the original Golden Tee.
When it's a classic. Mossy is asking, where does a game like Pac-Man Battle Royale fit in the scale of games here at the arcade? Is it in the DDR Golden Tee Big Buck Hunter category?
No. See,
that's a big four-player one, isn't it?
There's like a... Yeah.
Okay.
I
think 257 has it.
Well, they have their massive wall-mounted... giant projector wall screen one.
Yeah.
There's just like tabletop versions of it.
Oh.
Which don't take up an egregious amount of space. A lot of that, I'm not opposed to getting newer games. A lot of that though comes down to like we have Castlevania, like we have Metal Gear. Like those are very new. To me, there's something that you can't go play somewhere else. And
so when they become less popular at Dave and Buster's...
We don't have competition in the area. We have friends. Right. We don't want to buy the things that they bought.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, like,
it's like we can get... Like, I know Golden Tee, they have those everywhere. Like, there's...
You could sneeze at a bar and
hey,
you probably
gonna
you need
one.
To clean the Golden Tee.
Yeah.
Big Buck Hunter, like stuff, games like that. Like, they've kept the arcade industry alive with putting out games like that.
Yeah, like, they've killed it in the same the same breath, because now you can just mass produce a game that is family friendly, and you can stick in every bar, and it has completely eradicated the originality. It used to be like Jimmy's Hot Dogs.
Yeah.
You used to be able to go into that back game room, and there was four or five different weird games in there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a pinball machine, a Major League the Season or something.
Maybe a Double Dragon or
something.
Yeah. In a sense, now, though,
it's the same game everywhere you go.
In a sense, part of that comes down, again, to the techs. Like, the games will go down, nobody can fix them, and what do you bring in?
Yeah.
Well, this game will definitely be gone next year, so it'll be fine. And that's,
absolutely.
That's... one of those, there's a lot of elements that have made the arcade industry get to where it's at. Like the games that have kept it running, Big Buck Hunter, like Raw Thrills has all their racing games, super bikes, and...
who made the Terminator Salvation game?
Raw Thrills.
That's Raw Thrills,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they do an incredible... they have the new Batman racing game. Which is one, honestly, if I could find one at a great price, I would pick that up in a second. Like, I think people here would love...
oh, yeah, absolutely. The theme game, sure.
Yeah.
Same thing, Terminator Salvation.
But
Aliens Extermination.
But Fast and the Furious is no different than Need for Speed, is no different than San Francisco Rush. There's a couple of them we don't need.
Sure. Yeah,
so.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why we don't have every version of Street Fighter. We just have the important...
right.
Trade.
Sorry, you're not getting in.
We don't have Champion Edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're missing a few.
We're missing a few.
Yeah.
But I remember saying this a few months ago. We're never getting NBA Hang Time, and we're never getting Blitz 2000 Gold. Well, I don't want to say never, but it's more likely than not, because Jam is better than Hang Time, and 99 is better than 2000. So why, you know, if we already have the best game, we don't need to run the other version of it.
Yeah.
Just to have one extra feature in Arizona instead of Phoenix, you know, like the wording.
There's, well, and in a sense, there are instances, like... we had Street Fighter Zero 3, or Street Fighter Alpha 3, and we had Zero 3 Upper.
Which is essentially the same game with four extra characters. Some changes.
Very, very minor changes.
Yeah.
The hardware was different, which was interesting.
Yeah.
But, and eventually we did get rid of one.
No, we scrapped them.
But, I don't know. It's a fine line.
Yeah, because with the limited space we have, how much do we want to overlap? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And there would be a line for Golden Tee.
Yeah.
The parents would just, that's what they would play.
Yeah.
And like the Doc said it a long time ago, I like having the driving games at the back of the arcade because everybody plays the driving games. And it forces them to walk by all the other games in the arcade, and they might play something they might not have played before.
Yeah.
And like you, the same thing, you stick a guy watching five kids and he's going to sit at Golden Tee because he's comfortable right there and he can have success at it. And
yeah.
He'll never play Mappy and see that's actually sure. Cool, you know, like, and, you know, or anything that's right next to the game that their kid is playing.
Well, and we love getting games like the developers that hang out here, again, Brian Cullen, Jeff Lee, we love having their games, and that's no different for, like, George Petro, Eugene Jarvis, like,
yeah,
some of their newer stuff that would be great, but it just...
a lot of it's bigger, too.
A lot of it is.
Yeah.
It comes down to space, time, what we have. There's a lot of factors to it. So,
cool.
But don't underestimate us on getting anything.
Yeah. A couple more inputs here. Rocco says nothing wrong with Big Buck Hunter.
I agree.
Seth is saying, I lobbied for Baseball Stars or World Series 99.
World Series 99.
You know, the little sticks that flip?
Yeah. That is the finest baseball game.
I remember that one.
It's the finest version of it. They made a 2000 and a 2K3, and they're terrible. 99 is the best baseball game out there. What?
Who made that?
Yeah, it's Sega.
Yeah.
It's a Sega game, and it's not a...
Sega Week's coming up.
We do not have a baseball game on the floor.
We do not.
I have never.
That's because I hate baseball.
I have never seen baseball played in my life.
Yeah.
Even though living in Chicago?
Never seen a game of baseball.
Oh, okay. That's an odd thing, I think, then.
Well, it weighs in on us ever getting a baseball game, I think. Okay.
Last comment here. Steven Lucas, Rose. Used to have Rose on particular themes, like all wrestling games in one row or superhero games in one row. Now with a bit more room to play, are we going to reunite the theme games together instead of scattered throughout? I think our layout's going to change a little bit.
Oh, it's coming up, right? There is a big layout change coming. Okay. When? It all comes down to timing. We have been spread so thin with everything that's going on and all the events and lots of stuff going on over on productions, and I'm definitely not happy with how the games are laid out currently, and it's something that we want to correct soon. But it's just a matter of, it's not a small feat to rearrange.
Yeah, this isn't feasible to do in a week.
It's a big Tetris
problem. It'll
be
overnights for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah,
it'll happen in sections.
Just on the logistics.
For sure.
Yeah, just on the logistics of getting the power to those spots.
Right.
It's all been laid out for the games as they sit.
That
you
won't
move it to
change.
Another, no,
like,
no, but
it's all within working of the confines of. There's a lot of criteria that can't change, so it's like...
Yeah, but there's a lot of games that have an extra long cord because the power strip goes between two games down.
Sure.
And then
sure.
Short ones. And if we rearrange all that without having the setup, it's going to be... It's not just moving a game from point A to point B. I'll guarantee when we do that, I'm going to be putting at least 20 new power cords in cabinets. Just because. I'm
sure.
Going to find one that's ripped and... I'm not going to plug this back in without doing it.
Yeah.
So I got to take the time and replace the power cord. You know, it's just so there's always a hang up for that. And
for sure.
I want some of the vector games off the wall because then I don't have to pull them out to work on them. I can just walk around the back.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of stuff coming, but
for sure. And again, like I don't think people realize on a weekly basis how much is going on here between like we're still heavily working on our QR app, which you can download from the Apple Store or from
Google Play.
Yeah. Podcasts, and then putting up a new game every week is
that's on top of hundreds of people coming in.
Right,
yeah.
Dealing with
yeah.
helping people open new arcades and just a lot of stuff going on. So bear with us.
Yeah.
We will get our rows sorted out. And it will look awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's all I had. There's a couple things that we can delve into more deeply on the next podcast. Chicago Video Game Law Summit's coming up soon.
That is coming out the week after MGC.
Yeah, the 16th on Saturday.
Yes.
I wanted to give them a shout out. If you're not, if you'd like to visit their site, it's cvgls.com. It has to do with a lot of the laws in the area, like legal protections that games should get or get. Are you going to be attending again?
Yes, we will be there.
I want to go.
It's
I do. I want to go to that.
I spoke last year at the 2015 Chicago Video Game Law Summit on the topic of violent video games. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
We're going a little bit bigger scale this time. Brian Cullen's coming with us. Jeff Lee's coming with us. So should be fun. Should be fun.
Cool. All right. I guess that's all I have then.
All right. Well, shall we wrap it up, or
yeah.
Anything else you want to cover?
No, I think we're good for now. We had a lot in
yeah.
there.
Definitely
yeah.
a fun podcast. Mm-hmm. Huge shout outs and thank you, Seth,
mm-hmm.
for everything that you do. Doug Fox is already
taking off, yep.
Probably to go work on more of our boards somewhere.
Yep.
Wait.
What are you playing currently?
Oh,
we can't end
yes,
without doing that.
We can't.
Duke always reminds me.
I
saw you playing Skycursor today.
I did. I played a quick game of Skycursor. I'm playing a little bit of Battle Garega. Playing Exterminator.
Cool.
What else? I can't even think of what else I've been playing. It's all such a blur.
No, if any of you guys are on PS4 and play Call of Duty Zombies, you can add me. Darknut Death. I just did the Darizin Daraka Easter egg yesterday.
So isn't your name spelled some weird way? Like Death is spelled...
No, it's just Darknutdeath.
Okay, Darknut Death. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I love playing zombies with anybody, especially you guys or people I know.
So. What time are you normally on?
When I'm not here, which is...
so
that's
never.
That's it.
Well, definitely check out... look on what system?
PS4.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Very cool. Well, I guess that just about wraps it up. Mm-hmm. Pete, what have you been... I know what you've been playing.
I've been playing Captain America and the Avengers.
Yeah.
So I'll update people on that later, but that's all I'm...
Can we make a tell something?
Okay.
So I didn't get to post it yet on Orcade,
mm-hmm.
But you did set a new world record today.
Yeah, before open. I got it earlier today, and I didn't beat the game yet, so I still have some room to grow that score. I got to the second to last like mini boss guy, like Crossbones or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's there's another group of enemies and then the last guy, so that score is still going to go up more.
But you put up 685,202.
Yep.
Most impressive.
Yep. So that's what I've been playing lately. I've kind of been focused on that.
So I'm sure it'll be 1 CC before the weekend, I'm sure.
We'll see. Maybe.
Okay. Why rush?
Why rush? Yeah. Maybe I'll save it for MVC.
No, you won't. You'll do it next playthrough.
Maybe.
Yeah. Before the end of the day.
Maybe.
What are you going to play next? What are you lining up on?
I'm thinking Polestar, possibly.
Polestar. Very cool. And then that would lead into Blazing Star.
Yeah. And then I don't know where I go from there. I don't know. Maybe Crime City eventually, since I bought that board.
I think I know. I think we have some games coming up that I bet you spend some time on.
Okay.
So I don't know if one will be going up this Monday. But this Monday, don't forget, new game going up on the arcade floor. Going to be awesome. See who moves one step closer to the 10X championship belt.
Belt is highly coveted.
It is. It's getting intense.
Yeah. There's been some moments of salt I've seen out there.
I
don't know about salt, but...
I wouldn't say salt.
Just competitiveness.
It's competitiveness.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yes,
with that, we will wrap it up. Again, thanks to Seth Young and Doug Fox for joining us today. Huge thanks to Gamer of the Year Pete Hahn, as always.
What is that, a vampire?
No, that's the cheering noise from Nintendo.
Oh, that's right.
You scored
RBI baseball.
Yeah.
RBI,
I didn't know it because I've never watched a game of RBI baseball.
No, man.
Even my dad played that game. Which he didn't like video games. He played that game.
Well, not me. I didn't play that one.
All right.
Well, thanks, everybody. This is Doc Mac from the Galloping Ghost Arcade, and we hope to see you around the arcade soon. Thanks, everybody.
Take care. See y'all later.